I call the meeting to order. The date is March 9, 2011, time approximately 8:05 a.m. This is a joint committee meeting of the House and Senate Education Committees. In attendance today on the Senate side are Co-Chair Meyer, Senator Stevens, Senator French, and myself, Co-Chair Thomas. We expect Senator Davis to show up shortly. As she enters, as we mention her name, Senator Davis has arrived.
Good morning, Betty.
And Senator, Representative Alan Dick, would you please introduce your folks?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, we have Representative Foggy, Kawasaki, Wilson, and Seaton, and Pruitt, and myself, Co-Chair Alan Dick.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome, everyone. Both House and Senate committees have some form of a pre-K bill before them this session. All the studies we have seen say that the earlier a child starts his education, the better off the outcome is, and we're certainly certainly enthused about that concept. We've spent a fair amount of time as we went through the believe it or not, on the other end of the scale, as we looked at the scholarship situation and how that is applied. We went through a lot of the things that affect the system on the way up. So that's what got us starting with pre-K and looking all the way through the college situation, everything in between. And we think we've moved a lot of initiatives forward, so we feel very good about that. The purpose of our meeting here today is to hear a presentation by Mr. Bill Millett on early childhood development. Mr. Millett is president of Scope View Strategic Advantage in Charlotte, North Carolina. Scope View Strategic Advantage is a consulting firm based in Charlotte, which has assisted private, nonprofit, public clients in the areas of economic, organizational, and business development. Mr. Millett has worked with dozens of local partnerships for children in North Carolina, Michigan, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Alaska, Arkansas, Missouri, Virginia Tech, and Minnesota. And I had the pleasure of hearing Mr. Millett at a presentation, Best Beginnings, about a year and a half or so ago at Providence Hospital. I was extremely impressed and appreciated his approach as well as his knowledge of the subject. So, Mr. Millett, if you care to come forward, please, and put yourself on the record and who you represent, and proceed with your presentation.
Senator, thank you. It's good to see you again, sir. Bill Millett from Charlotte, Scope View Strategic Advantage. When you have an opportunity to meet with a distinguished group like this, you have a responsibility not just to come in with a program that you could roll out in any organization, but to try to get a sense of the room, read the room, and adjust your remarks accordingly. And Senator and Representative Dick, I've got to tell you, this is a very easy room to read. Right now, I know what most of you are thinking. Something very close to this. And if you're not thinking that, you probably should be. But I want to put in a couple of disclaimers. It's true. I am some darn guy from North Carolina. But the quality of the PowerPoint has yet to be determined. And I am most definitely not here as a North Carolinian to tell Alaskans how to do things in Alaska. I am here to lay out a business case, as Senator Thomas referenced, for quality early education, and to say that the case has not been advanced on a national level very well because it's focused on one small component of it. A natural question for those of you around the table is, particularly in today's environment, on an international, on a national, on an Alaska level, why do we even bother spending time about early education? Don't we have enough problems with those looking for jobs today? It's true, the stock market has rebounded, though still very erratic, but the job market is not. Not here, not in North Carolina, not in the United States. The answer why we're talking about early education can start off be found in this report that was issued a year and a half ago and updated last year by the new Commission on the Skills of the American Workforce. No-nonsense businessmen and women, including the executive director of the National Association of Manufacturers, who is the former governor of Michigan, John Engler. Some of you may have come into him over the years. As hard-nosed as they get. That report that came out started off this way. We used to be the best. We were the best educated, had the most driven workforce. Those days are over. We don't have that anymore. And the report spelled out 16 specific things that we as a nation should do. I'm sure, Senator, that there would not be consensus in this room on all the 16. Some of them are very controversial. But they start off chronologically where they should. talking about quality early education is one of the best investments, investment keyword, that an organization, that a nation can make. But America has never ponied up. And as a result, our place of superiority has diminished. It was about 2.5 years ago when we woke up to this headline, the precipitation of a financial meltdown that has affected everybody in this room. Started hearing this phrase, too big to fail, a phrase that was applied to banks, including Bank of America, that's headquartered in my hometown, insurance groups and that sort of thing. And while I am appalled at some of the board and executive director malfeasance that led to that situation and lack of due diligence on some of the acquisitions, I understand, I get intellectually why we had, as a nation, had to invest in there to save ourselves. And some of those investments are paying off nicely. So I kind of get the too big to fail. What I don't get is our lack of understanding the flip side of that, that not only are those kids too small to deserve to fail, they're important for us to allow to fail. And when I say important, I'm not talking for their own sake, although that's part of it. I'm talking about they're too important to this state, to the businesses in this state, and to our nation and a global economy. Here's the problem with early education, and my compliments to Abby Hensley and the Best Beginnings Group, and Senator, I don't say that just to be a nice guy, because I'm not particularly a nice guy, but they recognize that in today's market, you can't sell quality early education with a warm and fuzzy message. Here's the analogy. Here are 9 images of your state, 9 different images, but I have not come close to capturing the totality of what Alaska offers. But suppose, rather than showing 9 different images, I just showed 9 different images of Denali. I mean, it's hallmark, it's a landmark, it's a representative of Alaska, but it is only a representative. It's a mistake that early educators nationally have made. They represented the importance of what they do with images like this, sir. Nothing wrong with those images, except those aren't 9 different images. Those are 9 variations on one theme. Let's do it because it's the right thing for kids. I got no problem with that. That is a very critical part of it. But if you're trying to sell the importance of quality early education in the economic world of 2011 by saying, let's do it because it's the right thing for kids, that is a losing hand. So if you came in here this morning expecting seeing images like that, you're going to be disappointed. That's not what I'm here to show. I'm here to talk about quality early education in terms of workforce development, in terms of economic development, in terms of community development. As the Senator indicated, I spend most of my time in the corporate world. Most of my work is with companies that are trying to take market share from their competitors. So I'm a competitive guy. This quality early education thing is a competitive issue. Competitive for Alaska against the rest of the world, competitive for the United States against the rest of the world. And I'm going to make this case without using a single early educator. I'm going to make it in terms of what the business community says and what some other communities, including the military community, says. The law enforcement community and the military community, a group of distinguished retired senior military officers who put quality early education as a matter of national security, not economic security, national security. The young kids, I know we've got some fathers and grandfathers and mothers and maybe grandmothers around the table today. Your kids or your grandkids will grow up in a world that is unlike anything any of us experienced. The competition will be more intense. Matters will be more complicated. You will need skills. They will need skills to succeed that we didn't need. When I was growing up in Aiken, South Carolina, my competition for future jobs was other places in the Carolinas, along the eastern seaboard, maybe out to Mississippi. Your kids, your grandkids, their competition is growing up on at least 5 other continents, and they're going to have access to information that their counterparts did not have. And the ratio of quality jobs in quality companies versus those people chasing them, the odds are a lot worse today for us than they used to be. You want to see where the competition for Alaska's kids are? Among other places, look here and here and know this. If you take the smartest 28% of kids in India or the smartest 25% of kids in China, that's more smart kids than we got kids. We are outnumbered. So if you drive around town and you see a bumper sticker that looks something like that, and no, I did not drive around town looking for that bumper sticker. That is a Photoshop. But nonetheless, if you see something that looks like that, feel good for that family. But remember, those other countries, they got more honor students than we have students. Back in the old days, when I was a younger guy, it was us versus the Ruskies. pretty simple strategy. We had our pieces, they had their pieces. Today, everybody's got pieces in play. It's a lot more complicated. And again, those young people of Alaska today, those 55,000 kids under age of five, they need to be developing skills that will allow them to succeed. Now, when you talk about education, and I'm sure you gentlemen and ladies have seen this far better than I have and are far more knowledgeable, but nonetheless, when people talk about the problem with education, there's a fairly convenient whipping set of folks. You know, let's just fire the bad teachers. And there are bad teachers. There are bad teachers everywhere. And in some places, it's very tough to do anything about it. But there are lots of great teachers. There are lots of teachers who would love to do the right sort of thing for the kids if they're given the tools and the flexibility to do so. And I think this making the teachers the focal point of the criticism, the private sector answer was delivered by this gentleman, Charles Butt, who's the chairman and CEO of one of the largest privately held companies in the United States. He testified before in Congress last year before the Senate Finance Committee, excuse me, the Senate Education Committee, and he said this. And I think he's exactly right. The blame is one to be shared. Shared by some of us as parents, shared by an American society that has not placed the appropriate part on education, an American society that has gotten complacent, that thinks that we are somehow God's chosen people, he's going to protect us, stand back world, America's coming through. To his credit, the then chairman of that Senate Education Committee responded this way. Exactly right. Problem lies with kids before they start school. And if you don't fix that part of it, then it is going to be an educational process that talks about patch and fill. Senator Thomas, I was watching Gavel, Alaska the other morning when my stomach and brain were trying to line up on exactly what time zone I was in, and saw the testimony before Representative Dick, your committee, on the performance scholarships. And I think you positioned it exactly correctly, sir, in terms of what happens in the early years depends or drives what happens in the later years. And one of the issues that your committee was concerned with was making sure that kids throughout Alaska had an opportunity for that and had the training and the education for that. And that's exactly the same issue at that level as it is in the very earliest years. Which is why you go to best beginnings, parents as teachers, and the parent component of what you're talking about is critical to it. You get the parenting piece right, a lot of the other things go an awful lot better. So when we talk about early education, ma'am, it's not just a formal child care setting. That's part of it. But so is what happens in the home and the degree to which parents have the skills. Nothing about Best Beginnings is an attempt to impose government control on anything. It is to provide opportunities for those parents who want to become better informed on how to raise their kids to do that, as well as to strengthen the quality and the affordability of child care and child care settings across the state. Now, I talked about making the business case. Here is the sort of thing that early educators typically throw up on the wall. You know, a statement that all aspects of adult human capital formation start at birth. Now, you know, that comes from the Harvard Center on the Developing Child. What do you expect those people to say? It'd be like if you were considering using our firm for something and you said, called up and said, Bill, is your firm a good firm? Well, yeah, we're doing good, all right. The Harvard Center of the Developing Child is going to say, yeah, we're pretty important. So I dismiss stuff like that. They're too vested. But suppose the case for quality early education is not made there, but made by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Not a warm and fuzzy group, a group that has been at odds with the current administration on many issues right now, and yet a group that a year and a half ago issued this report, new education workforce development policy priorities, and they said there were four pillars of workforce development. The first one, the one that sets the stage for everything else, is early education and pre-K. Everything, literally everything that follows it, is based on how successful that is. So the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is officially on record as saying that. All of that starts right there. If you get that piece right, then these outcomes become more likely and less costly to the benefit not just of those individuals, but collectively to us as a nation and to you as a state. If you want to see more about this, this report was issued just 4 months ago from the U.S. Chamber. It's available online. Why business should support early childhood education. It's making the workforce development case. and it's no nonsense, and it's full of facts. Reason that's so important, that not that many of us Americans, we constitute less than 6% of the world's population, and Alaska is a very small part of that in terms of people. Probably, well, it's under 1%, that's for sure. So I was both appalled and appreciative of the audacity of this gentleman appearing on the Stanford campus, the Stanford campus where Google was basically developed. He was there 6 months ago. He is Robin Li, the founder of Baidu, which is the Chinese Google. Baidu, Google has been in and out of China and all sorts of issues there, but a minor point, the Chinese Baidu is their Google. He was on the campus of Stanford 6 months ago and had this to say. And you know what? He's right. We are outnumbered. If we don't develop creative thinking skills, if we don't steal from people who are beating us in terms of early childhood development, education development, apply those lessons here, he's exactly right. And it will be that shining city on the hill, the sun sets. Here's somebody else who thinks that quality early education is an economic development issue. The Business Roundtable. The bluest blue chip of corporate America. You can see some of the names up there. 120 companies, they represent more than 40% of the value on the New York Stock Exchange. These men and women are heavy hitters. You don't sit at that table if you're some low-life senior VP. You are either the chair or you're the chief executive officer. They issued a report, you can see what the business they're in, advocating policies to ensure vigorous U.S. economic growth. They issued a report calling upon state and federal governments to make high quality, important qualifier there, early education a top priority for this reason. It's workforce development, stronger economy. And it wasn't just a general statement in terms of we support quality education. There were five particular principles that they embraced, that early education ought to be in alignment with K through 12 and beyond that, as Senator Thomas has indicated. It should be in alignment, so every stage builds on the previous stage. That we recognize the importance of teachers, from the very first teachers onward, in ways that we don't recognize them now. I'm not just talking monetary. I'm talking about the respect with which they are held, the importance, the integration that parents have with those teachers. Program at Business Roundtable also recognized the primacy of parents as their children's first teachers. It's a parent's responsibility. And if you're dealing with something like Best Beginnings or some of the other issues before you, you're using the public's money, accountability. Prove it. Say what you're going to do, not in more and better ways, but how much better are you going to do it? How are you going to measure it? How are you going to report to us? And then partnerships. Include the people already here. And one of the things I like best about Best Beginnings, which is modeled on a program in North Carolina, been around for 17 or 18 years, it's about local control, local accountability. So a program in Fairbanks may look considerably different than one in Juneau or up in Barrow or wherever. It's accountability, it's responsibility, it's local authority. You put those together in Alaska, you get Best Beginnings. And Best Beginnings, to a much better extent than their counterparts in other states, have been responsible in taking that message to Alaskans, and in this case, Alaska legislators. Another group sees the importance. Committee for Economic Development, a combined group of universities and corporations at the highest level. They got their start during World War II when the country put together the best thinkers to say, how could we help Europe recover? Their first job was the Marshall Plan. They issued a report, title speaks for itself, Preschool Investments, Economic Tools. Contrasted how wise it is to invest in things like that and how the payoff there is frequently better than in state incentive grants. And incidentally, the author of this report, Dr. James Heckman, University of Chicago, 2000 Nobel Laureate in Economics. So I always tell people when they want to debate this issue with me, you go ahead, you get your guy. My guy's better. A lot better. Tony Wagner, 2 years ago, Representative Dick, talked to more than 150 major employers across the country and asked them, what aren't you seeing in your workforce? And what they told him was the same thing that I hear when I travel with corporations around the country looking for the right place to put companies. That there were seven things that emerged at the top of the trap. Now, I don't think that will surprise you. I suspect some of you who have connections to the private sector may see a lack of that yourself. The important thing is to remember is this. If you want an Alaskan workforce that fires on all cylinders, that's driven, that's motivated, that is creative, don't forget where all that starts. It doesn't start in high school or middle school. It either starts or diminishes right there. When a young child is born, are you a young father? Are you a father, sir?
Yes, sir.
Do you have young children?
Yes, sir.
How old are they?
5 and 1.5.
1.5, okay. When your kids were born, they have about 120 billion cells in their brain. To put that in context, that's about the number of stars in the Milky Way galaxy. In the first 4 years of life, the basic architecture of your children's brains are established as synaptic connections are made. They are made at the rate of 700 connections a second, which means when you go home today and see your child, he or she, whichever the youngest one is, will have 60,480,000 connections they did not have when you came in here this morning. I mean, it is amazing, the brain development. I'm not going to bore you with that, except to say that the environments in which kids grow up determines in no small part the way the brain looks. If they're worked with, if they live in stress-free environments, if they're encouraged, the brain physically is different, and their capabilities as adults is different. And most important today, they become tax generators and not tax consumers, and there are any number of long-standing studies that show what the return on investment is. Other point, and this is in no way to diminish the importance of K through 12 or post-secondary, same Dr. James Heckman, the Nobel laureate, said that the earlier you invest, the higher the rate of return. In part, it makes sense. If you get the first part right, all those benefits carry through the rest of the education. But as a nation, we tend to invest on the backside and not on the front side. We've got great colleges, and I'll address who's going through those colleges in a minute or two. But the best investment is up front. World is flat. Well, I suspect many people are familiar with that. Tom Friedman talks about America's position in the world today, how in our dad's generation we look like that. And today we're fat, we're complacent, we're happy, we're sitting on our butts. He talks about some specific areas where we've fallen behind our competition. I'm not going to go through those. But he concludes a key portion of his report like this. And if you think that's an overstatement, Bill Gates in Asia last year. Look at those faces. Look at those faces. Those kids want to start their own Microsoft. They want to work for Bill Gates. They are energized. They are motivated. And incidentally, those aren't Chinese kids on the streets of Beijing. Those are Vietnamese kids on the streets of Hanoi, a place we've bombed in our lifetime. Now let me pose a hypothetical to you. Suppose that next week, Britney Spears and Bill Gates both came to Alaska. Let's say they came to Anchorage. Britney's on the south side of town. Gates is on the north side of town. Schools let out. Where are the majority of your kids going? I think the answer would be the same across Alaska as it would be across North Carolina, across America. That's not a teacher problem. That's a culture problem. Here's Bill Gates in my hometown about 4 months ago. Our performance is at every level is dropping against the rest of the world, and he talked about the importance of early education. Now, I can't come up to Alaska this time of the year without making some Iditarod reference. I know it was, what, Saturday with a ceremonial start? Okay. So let's put America's educational performance in Iditarod terms. Okay. Let's say we've got an American musher against 34 other mushers. How are we doing? Nope. Of 34 mushers, are we top 12? Mm-mm. Let's suffice it to say that we're not exactly the Lance Mackey of education. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we don't get the Red Lantern. We're not in last place. But there's a certain honor that attaches to the Red Lantern. It's perseverance. You see the race to the end. There's a certain honor to it. It's not, that's not a sign of disgrace. But here's the American sled sitting back there. We are 14th in terms of reading proficiency of 34 countries. We are 17th, and this is of measuring 15-year-old performance, 17 against 34 countries around the world, 17th in terms of science proficiency, and 25th in terms of math proficiency. Here's our competition. We're back there with the sleds from Lithuania, Italy, Latvia, Greece. I've been to most of those places. Those are nice places to visit. But those aren't the people I want to compete with economically. If you're looking for the people that we're trying to compete with economically, they're at the front of the pack. We're not. There's a different kind of racing down in my hometown. You know, I kind of resent coming up here and y'all talking about the last great American race. Don't y'all know nothing about NASCAR? Well, in any case, if I was making this NASCAR analogy, we'd be the 38 car, up in the air, headed in the wrong direction. And the business community says, we've had our, you know, had our head in the sand. That's the way we say things in North Carolina. We're kind of polite people. What I love about coming up to Alaska, Senator Thomas, you ask somebody a question, you're going to get an answer, an unvarnished answer. So let me give you the Alaskan translation of that slide, where we're positioned today. Okay? We need to wake up. And the business community says that's where it starts. That's where you invest. It requires patience. It requires men and women of vision who can see beyond the next election, because some of the payoff will come not in your term of office, maybe not in your lifetime. But the results of making that investment or the consequences of not making it are so substantial to our future places of world power or lack of same, it's not an investment we can afford to pass on. Particularly, look at Alaska today. All this, these numbers come from the commission, your commission on post-secondary education. So I've not made these up. This report now is 2 years old, I think. Representative Kawasaki, I think I met you in Anchorage about 4 years ago. I think you were just starting your legislative career, as I recall, sir. And so the numbers are a little bit dated, but I think the basic deal still holds. 10 years from now, only 6% of ninth graders will have a college degree. I'm not saying you need a college degree to succeed. You don't. But here's a disturbing number. 38% of ninth graders won't have their high school degree 10 years from now. Where does that put you? 50th out of 50 states in a nation that's not knocking anybody's socks off educationally. You are blessed with great natural resources, but you get no credit for that. You inherited that. Ultimately, the measure will be what happens, what responsibility you take with the human resources. There's every indication that, and, you know a lot more about this than I do, but the oil pipelines running at about a third of capacity as it was 20 years ago. As I understand it, there are plans regularly updated when it reaches the flood that we'll have to dismantle it because that's the way the legislation was written. Whether or not the natural gas pipeline takes effect is dependent on a number of things, some of them political, some of them in terms of what happens with shale gas price in the lower 48. But the human resources will always be there. And it's not just a question of American society in terms of high school dropout rates. You know, across the country, it's about 30%. But that's the people who drop out. How about the kids who go to college? A third of kids in American colleges today have to be enrolled in remedial education, which to me says they shouldn't have gotten out of high school in the first place. And there's a defined societal cost of in excess of $2.7 billion that we spend on those programs. Suppose we took half of that and invested in early education up front. Now, here's the one educational source I will cite, Education Commission of the States. All 50 states belong, and they very much define early education as the start of a trajectory that ultimately determines success, not just educationally, but in the corporate sector. The important thing here is how nonpartisan this issue is. The current chairman of the Education Commission of the States is Governor Tim Pawlenty of Minnesota, widely reported to be on the front lines of seeking the Republican nomination for the presidency in 2012. His predecessor was Kathleen Sebelius, then the Democratic Senator of Kansas, now the Secretary of Health and Human Services in the Obama administration. Her predecessor, Mike Huckabee, then Republican Governor of Arkansas, and his predecessor, Mark Warner, Democratic Governor of Virginia. So there's been consensus on this, and it's interesting. Oh, by the way, this name probably knows you. Executive director of that group is your former secretary of education and early learning. Do I have that correct?
Commissioner,
thank you, sir. And he now heads that group, and no doubt has an Alaska perspective on things. Last 2 years, this group has issued a couple of interesting reports, international benchmarking blueprint, and international benchmarking toolkit. Well, what's the deal with international? Why are we talking about that? Well, here's why. So they're basically saying if North Carolina is trying to compare itself against Colorado, or Alaska's comparing itself against Florida, that's setting the bar awfully low. We need to be comparing against countries that are beating us. And you can find them. Doesn't take hard to look. And the National Governors Association issued this report last year. Look at the title of this report. Do you see the irony there? When all of us were growing up, the rest of the world aspired to an American quality education. Your young kids, they'll need a lot of creativity and innovation to thrive. And for the first time, the ways of measuring it, creativity in the United States is declining. Creativity starts here. And we have, unlike many other countries, we have no policy to foster innovation or creativity. And one of the best statements, Judy Estrin, the more you know about this woman, the more you'll respect her in terms of what it will take to position us for a bright future for ourselves and for our children, says this, no child left behind, and this is unassailable. It's well-intentioned. It was fathered by the Bush administration. It has been embraced and tweaked by the Obama administration. But it is teaching to the test. It is forcing teachers into a very narrow curriculum. It does not allow for innovation. It almost punishes for innovation because teachers are judged by how well their kids do on the test. Ms. Estrin says this, the end result of that is we're going to be cranking out robots, people who don't know how to think, but they can vomit out facts. Other countries are outperforming us when it comes to early childhood brain development, which translates going forward. They're teaching kids at the youngest ages, I'm talking 1 or 2 years old, of here's a conundrum for you, here's a puzzle for you. Look at 5 solutions and tell me which one's the best. Well, here's another situation. There's cheese. How do you get it? Do you throw your buddy on it so he dies, but you get the cheese? Do you sneak around back? Or is there a better way of looking at it? There are better ways. And those are the sorts of things that are being taught in homes and in early childhood settings in the people, in the places that are beating us. The country that succeeds going forward will be those that are best prepared to generate ideas. Natural resources are great, but human resources are where the action is going to be going forward. Anybody familiar with this term? If you're not now, you soon will be. Obsolete is a contraction of obsolete and knowledge. Mm-hmm. And the implication there, Representative, I'm sorry, ma'am, is it, how do I pronounce your last name?
Cisna.
Representative Cisna, the implication there is that particularly when you're teaching to the test, knowledge changes so quickly that you need to learn how to think and adapt to new knowledge. Facts are important, but thinking is more important. Mm. And where does thinking begin? It begins right there. But suppose half of that crowd never gets the chance. Those light bulbs never go on. How do you measure that loss? Which is why I'm so enthusiastic about one of the programs of Best Beginnings, Imagination Library, Dolly Parton. For those communities that participate and the number that participate across Alaska, from the time a child is born until he turns 5, parents get one book a month. Doesn't cost much to sponsor that, $26 a month. And it goes back to the sort of thing that when you talk about Best Beginnings, it's not just more money. In some cases, not that much more money. But it's what sort of impact, what sort of return on investment can you get for the money available? Now, I know that Alaska is facing the same challenges, ladies and gentlemen, that my state is. Everybody's got fiscal problems. But quite frankly, I'm tired, and it's not directed towards you, but I'm tired of hearing people say, the education problem is a money problem. This report talked about if a foreign power tried to impose on us the level of educational performance that we have today, that'd be an act of war. That report did not come out last week or last month or last year. That report came out in the first term of President Reagan. And since then, every few years, distinguished groups of educators and corporations have generated other tests. Rising Above the Gathering Storm, Innovation America. And in addition, Rising Above the Gathering Storm is about 6 years old. It was updated last year, rapidly approaching Category 5. Now, I know you've got weather issues up here. I don't think hurricanes come up very often, but down my way they do. Category 5 refers to a hurricane. Here's what a Category 5 looks like on a radar screen. And here's what it looks like on the ground. It wipes out everything. And the most recent, about a year and a half old now, analysis came out in terms of looking at Americans' competitiveness, which is an evaluation of educational systems, importance of pre-K, corporate investment in research and development, and other sorts of things. Say that right now we rank sixth, which is a little disturbing. It's more disturbing, though, if you look at the track record and see that over the last 10 years, who leads? Well, probably not surprising that China's up there. Let's see, we're up there somewhere. Where are we? Oh, yeah, there we are, 40th out of 40. The ramifications of that are profound. And that's been the American reaction. Never has the pogo been more correct. That's a message that needs to resonate in the hallways in Washington, mm-hmm. if I may be so presumptuous, here in Juneau, mm-hmm. in boardrooms across Alaska and across the nation. Close on a couple of short notes. Fly the Creative Class, Richard Florida talks about America's place in terms of developing talent and notes that we've always benefited from immigrants. That last century was meant like this. Putting the two on the bottom came from Eastern Europe and were the primary reason that we beat the Axis powers, the A-bomb, in World War II. Thank God they were on our side. Still holds true. We have businessmen and women, including Andrew Grove, a Hungarian who founded Intel. But going forward, we're not going to have so much of that, in part because we've closed our borders in understandable reaction to 9/11, and in some because we overreacted and become so insular that American companies cannot find the talent here and have to locate overseas because that's where the talent is. So the Statue of Liberty, that's always looked something like that. Going forward, she's going to look more like that. And talent that used to come here. I talked about the great schools. We do have great schools, but you know that 2 years ago, the last time it was measured, 61% of students on American campuses who got PhD degrees in sciences and math were foreign nationals. They used to stay here and become part of us. And now increasingly they go home because there are opportunities there and they become part of the economic competition. So that's their last view of the Statue of Liberty. The brain drain in the United States, the taps being cut off. We have no American child to waste. From an economic standpoint. In winning the global talent showdown, a very appropriate analogy for this state talks about the global talent pipeline. Imagine, if you will, that 38% of the oil that left Prudhoe leaks into the tundra on the way to Valdez. That would be a disaster. Now, imagine that's an educational pipeline, and 38% of the kids who start ninth grade leak out before high school graduation. That's a disaster. Equally important, but unrecognized. And those sorts of things. Is this really an early education issue? National Science Foundation says so. Says you need to instill those sorts of things at the youngest ages. Let me give you a multiple choice quiz. Who are these folks? Are they their country's representatives, the United Nations, members of their Olympic team, or 80% of the Intel science talent search winners in the United States last year? They are, of course, the latter. All first or second generation Americans. Where are the rest of us? Some of us around the table are old enough to remember this. Remember what that was for? Thank you. Absolutely. Run down, no pet because of tired blood. Take fast acting Geritol. That's our national Geritol right there. It's the infusion. of parents who are committed, who recognize the opportunities that America gives, who want their kids to make the most of everything. If that's the Geritol, what does that make a lot of the rest of us? Now, I'm a baseball guy. More specifically, I'm a Phillies guy. Last few years, that's been a lot of fun. But for the first 40 years of my life, I did not forgive my father for making me a Phillies fan. It was brutal. But ultimately, it really doesn't matter whether you're Ryan Howard of the Phils, or you're a college kid chasing a dream at Mulcahy Field in Anchorage, or at Harmon Brothers Stadium in Palmer, or at Grodin Field in Fairbanks, or even if you're some young kid playing t-ball down the street. Baseball has a constant. It doesn't matter if you're making good contact with the ball if the competition's knocking the cover off of it. And that's exactly what's happened. We have too many of our kids up at bat, called out on strikes, never getting the bat off the shoulder. Those are the kids who didn't get the right start. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you're talking baseball, a kid with minor league talent will never play major league ball. Workforce development, a country with minor league talent will not succeed on a major league level. And both of those start at the same place. Let's start right there. Last point. Mission readiness. Senior military men and women of great distinction who have put their lives on the line, put other American lives on the line. Included Hugh Shelton from North Carolina, former chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, former Naval Secretary John Dalton. You can see what they're in the business of, ensuring our future national security. They came out with this report a year and a half ago saying that too many Americans, young Americans, don't qualify for military service because they're intellectually, morally unfit. What percent do you think that would be? Representative Dick, what would you guess?
20?
Representative Pruitt?
40.
All right. Here's what they say. That's not my number, that's theirs. And they position quality early education as an investment, a necessary investment, to provide not just our economic security, but our national security. Full funding early childhood education programs. At the end of the Iditarod, every year, I'm not sure, is it Sepala, Sepala, I'm not sure.
Sepala.
Sepala. Sepala award is given. Not to the winner, but to that musher who took the best care of his or her dogs while remaining competitive on the trail. Very distinguished award. And I understand that is almost as coveted as much as the wind in some circles. Suppose there was a Sepala award given to those countries that took the best care of the young children in their control while remaining competitive on the trail. We would not be a nominee, but I can assure you this. If we don't deliver the best care to our young children, we won't remain competitive at all on any trail. Mm-hmm. And this particular trail starts right there. I appreciate your time this morning, ladies and gentlemen, and your good humor throughout. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for your presentation. And some of us recently were in Washington, D.C., and had the opportunity to visit a Senate committee on outreach and steering, and the topic of the day was education. There were about 16 different organizations represented there, from school administrators, school districts, around the states, and almost all of them pointed exactly at the issue. That's what their point was for the day, and they were only given about 3 minutes apiece since there was such a large group to speak. Senator Begich was there, Harkin was there, and others came and went as they had time to attend, but it was all pointing towards early education. And I find it interesting. Change is always difficult in our lives, whatever the situation might be. And we recently passed a bill out of Senate Education that required we knocked our mandatory school age down 1 year to six and raised it 2 years to 18. So immediately received emails from people saying that made absolutely no difference how early a child started formal education, that that it would have no impact on them overall. And actually, we didn't respond to many of them. We talked to them on the phone, but it was clear to my staff that spoke to most of them that there was no changing those people's minds. That's exactly how they felt, and we weren't going to dissuade them from their thinking. So change is difficult, and I appreciate your approach on the idea of money that we can't afford not to, basically, is what it amounts to. And we certainly do see those changes overall in our education situation versus the foreign countries, some of them that have really don't have the wherewithal to afford the education
exactly.
that they're giving, but they are making sure that it is taking place and broader in some of the poor countries. Like India is particularly a very poor country, but actually has a very good educational system and improving dramatically. So anyhow, appreciate your comments, and I'm sure we have questions. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly hope that you have the chance to talk to our finance committees. That would be wonderful if you could be able to do that.
Thank you, Bill.
But the other one is not anywhere on there. I think one thing that we have kind of gotten away from in the last several generations is teaching personal responsibility. And where does that fit in?
Representative Wilson, that's a key component of the parental support portion of it. I think there's across the country too many parents think that that's the teacher's job, and it's not. But I think it's also one, if you look around the conduct of many adults, some of whom are the sorts of adults that kids envy, there's no sense of responsibility there either. The role models are wrong, and that becomes part of that American culture where we attach our importance. What parents teach their children are important. The sorts of ideals. You know, I can't imagine my father came out of the Depression. He had a mindset so driven, it reflects the kids. If you ever see the National Spelling Bee on TV, in the audience are these parents. You've seen it, sir. These parents are driven, and most of them do not look like us. They are Eastern European or they are Latino. They've come in. They're new. They want the best for their kids. And this is a long-winded answer to a very short question. I'll wrap up now. Pardon my length. That's a culture issue. It needs to be addressed in areas of responsibility, and unfortunately not just at the young level, at the adult level as well.
Other questions? Representative Dick?
If I can make a comment, you know, basketball is really big here in Alaska. It's especially in the villages and just a competition between villages. And it's just a lot of fun to go to town next door and kick butt, you know, and just come back feeling good. And recently I spoke to actually the educators in Galena, who are pretty exemplary in the state. And I said, why don't we take on China? You know, I said, we've got the young energy, and I think what you've spoken to here is something that we have very alive within us yet, and that's that competitive spirit. And not that we want to be adversarial, but at the same time, this provokes us to a very healthy competition. And we certainly do have we have a unique situation here. We have the native people. I've seen the genius of the native people, the creativity. I mean, MacGyver, get in the back seat. So when you talk about innovation, I think we have some of the greatest innovators on the planet here in Alaska. So I just thank you for inspiring us, inspiring me, and I want to copy the DVD on this session. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Dick in terms of the potential that we have in our own population, which is a different population. And really liked your presentation very much. I think the challenge here is different, however. We have part of our state that doesn't have an economic foundation in the way that or history that the rest of the country has. And we have the pieces of success here in this state that very few other places, perhaps in the world, have in sustainability. And that's one of the things that we don't talk about enough. And we do look at our children and know how important it is for them. But what this next generation, has to really take on, because it's happening fast, the kind of degradations to the planet that are happening, the challenges that are really playing out in Alaska faster than other places. So it's really in our face in many ways when you're really out there looking at those places. But we have children across the state, and we have the potential of actually sustainability on a very wonderful level that gives people choices that the rest of the world oftentimes just doesn't have. We have room. We have people. Local. And that's what you talked about, how important it is to have all of this education as a local thing. That has pieces that very few places in the planet really have. We could be successful in ways that no other place really has the ability to do. And somehow we have to have a presentation, and maybe we can help you create something like that, that really shows what we could do and make sure that we make a leap right now that not only gets the kids on the right page, but gives them an incentive, because we're talking about that incentive and we're really capturing it in our legislature and with our leaders. And that's really think not only of all of the kind of brilliant thinking we're going to have to do, because there aren't other places doing exactly what we can do, but that we do that. So, thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Sharon. And thank you, Mr. Miller. You mentioned several books that I'm not familiar with. If you were to create a reading list of two or three books for state legislators, what would they include? Oh,
thank you, Senator, for the question. First one is a brand new one, came out like three weeks ago, called Investing in Kids. And, sir, I'll be glad to send this material to Secretary of the Murray, along with the appropriate references. But it is the author there is the director of the Upjohn Institute for Workforce Development. So he's he's not an early childhood guy. But he documents in very measurable terms the payoff from those sorts of investments. There's another one by David Kirp, K-I-R-P, from I think it's Cal Berkeley. Title there is The Sandbox Investment. Again, looking at early education, not doing it because it's good for the kids. Do it because it's good for the country. There are several other books that talk about the competitive nature of the U.S. versus other places. And again, probably the easiest thing to do is for me just to put that together, get it to Murray, and he can get it out. And I appreciate Senator Stevens, the fact that your interest is such that you're interested in following up on that. That means a great deal, sir. Thank you.
Possibly the Imagination Library should send legislators a book. might be helpful. I don't think there's any doubt in most of the people on the education's committee's minds of just how important early education is. We all see the babies, as you show, basically, and how quickly they learn to do things. They're always looking at you and touching, doing this, and get them a cell phone in their hand, and how quickly they learn the various prompts on it. Push one button and see something that catches their interest. Somebody may have downloaded some application, cartoons or whatever it might be, and they immediately can go right back to that application, push that button again. So, and unfortunately, the concept of change being so difficult, I unfortunately at a relatively early age knew I wasn't going to be a mathematician, so I built a block almost to formula-driven mathematics and just struggled terribly in high school. So thank God I'm not looking for a college scholarship at this point in time. I wouldn't do very well. So thank you. Other questions? Well, thank you very much for your presentation. It's very enlightening. We appreciate it very much, and look forward to getting that reading list from you, as well as any other information that we can get.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Representative.
If I could make an announcement, just for convenience sake to the media, the House Education Committee will stay in this room after we take a break. It is.
Pardon me. Our next, Senate is next meeting is Friday, 8 a.m., and I'm not sure which room we're in. We're in the regular place.
Well, it's a joint meeting of the
church. Oh, that's right. Another joint meeting, that's right. That's right. And the subject matter for that one is?
President Stevens.
Gary's going to make it. Task force.
Okay, all right, the task force. Okay, all right, your presentation. Good. Yeah, we've been moving our schedule back here quite a bit, so it's been a little confusing. But anyhow, with that in mind, we appreciate the time on this. It's 9 a.m., and we'll take a brief at ease while we reshuffle the names a little bit and move from there. Thank you all.